Karneva Shunuyama Devaha Bhadram Pashye Makshabhir Yajatraha Stirarangaihi Stushtuvagam Sastanubihi Vyashema Devahitanyadayuhu Swasti Nahindro Vrittashravaha Swasti Nav Pusha Vishwavedaha Swasti Nastarkshyo Arishtanemihi Swasti No Brahaspatir Dadhatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good. Nice to see you all. Nice to be back in our old hall. I like this. This is, especially for classes of this nature, it seems much more appropriate. All right. We are coming towards the end of the second chapter, the Vaitatya Prakarana, and let's review what we saw at the end of the last class. Everything is pretty important, so let's make sure that we've got it clearly. This verse really sums up a lot of what we've been saying. See in front of me here so I don't have to twist my head. Yeah. So it says, Swapna Maye. Let's start with Drishte. Yatha Drishte. Yatha, just as Drishte, these are seen. What is seen? Swapna, dreams are seen. Maya, magic is seen. And Gandharva Nagaram, city in the clouds. Imagination. So all of these are seen. All of them are experienced. But tata, in the same way, Vishvam idam drishtam. This entire universe is seen similarly. The entire universe is seen to be similar to a dream, magic, or imagination. This Gandharva Nagaram, when you look in the clouds and imagine a palace. Now, we saw something a little technical at the end of the last class, which was quite important, so I want to return to it, and that is each of these are experienced. And Vedanta deals with experience. Whether it's real or not, we have to deal with our experience. After all, experience is what causes suffering. And the experience of that snake in the dark alley, even though the snake doesn't exist at all, it causes suffering. So this is not a philosophical inquiry into, and this is, I should rephrase that, this is less a philosophical inquiry into the ultimate reality, which it is, but more so, it is an analysis of the errors in thinking we make, errors that make us suffer. And the suffering is when we attribute too much reality to our experiences. As I said in the last class, we're not saying that what you experience is totally non-existent. You experience it. It's not like the elephant in my hand. You actually experience all of this. But the point is, it's experienced, but it's not as real as you. This is the idea. In a dream, whatever you experience is not as real as you, therefore can't harm you. Well, whatever you're experiencing right now in a waking state is similarly not as real as you. In what sense? We said our definition of reality is that which doesn't come and go. Waking state comes and goes. Dream state comes and goes. Deep sleep comes and goes. You, as Satchidananda Atma, you don't come and go. Therefore, even waking state experiences are not as real as you. They're less real than you. Therefore, they can't threaten you. And that's where we ended our last class. And this is Vedanteshu Vichakshinaihi. This is what is seen, drishtam, the fact that whatever you perceive in a waking state is not as real as you are. This is drishtam, this is seen, this is understood by whom? Vichakshinaihi, by those who are skilled, Vedanteshu, in the teachings of Vedanta. Shankara says, who are those who are skilled? He says it's due to aptavakya. Very nice expression. Vakya, the statements of apta. Apta are those who have gained this wisdom, those who are enlightened. Meaning, this isn't, maybe that's not a fair metaphor. So what was discovered by the rishis was passed on generation after generation after generation, and here we are, several thousands of years later, being blessed by the same tradition. So this is the aptavakya, the statements of the enlightened ones. Here, Vedanteshu Vichakshinaihi. This is understood by those who are literally skilled in the teachings of Vedanta. Okay, that summarizes where we were last week. And now we turn to the next verse, which many have called the most important verse in the entire Gaudapada Katika. Shankara says this verse summarizes the entire second chapter. So this Vaitatya Prakarana, the second chapter, according to Shankara, is summarized in this verse. Others will go further and say it is the most important verse in the entire Karika. Without question, it's the most quoted one. This is quoted all the time, and sometimes quoted to a bad effect. We'll talk about that at the end. In other words, not misquoted in the sense that they'll translate it correctly, but they'll quote it at the wrong time and place. I'll come back to that when we're done with that. Remind me if I forget. So let's see this verse. Na nirodho na chotpattir, na nirodho na chotpat, na baddho na cha sadakaha, na baddho na cha sa, na mamukshur na vaimuktaha, namu mukshur na vaimuk, ityesha paramartata. Ityesha paramartata. Esha, this is paramartata, the highest expression of the teachings of the ancient rishis, the ultimate truth, the ultimate reality. So what is that ultimate reality? Na nirodhaha. The language is a little technical. Na nirodhaha. There is no such thing as dissolution, destruction. Nacha utpattihi, nor is there any origin, any birth, any creation. There is no creation and destruction. There is no beginning and end. There is no arising of anything and passing away from of anything. Now that at first glance looks very abstract. So just to bring it home, go back to our rope snake. Does the rope snake have a birthday? Huh. There was a date when the rope was made. Is there a date when the snake was created? When it, remember, snakes come out of eggs, right? So was there a date? We don't think about stuff like that. Was there a date when that snake was hatched out of an egg? na utpattihi. And when you realize it's not a snake, did you kill the snake? How do you kill something that's not even there? Now, that's in the case of the rope snake. So very clearly, the rope snake has no birthday. The rope snake doesn't get destroyed. You can only destroy what exists. Rope snake doesn't exist, you can't destroy it. That's the drishtanta. What's the darshtanta? Everything you experience. Like, look around you right now. What you see around you right now has no origin, nor will it ever cease to exist, nor can it undergo dissolution, nirodha. It wasn't born, it wasn't created, it doesn't go away. This is a little unique to Gaudapada. I mentioned before, he doesn't like to get into the details of how creation took place. So his answer is, what creation? If you say, how did the three gunas transform themselves into five subtle elements and further transform themselves into five gross elements? If you could ask Gaudapada that question, you would say, what in the world are you talking about? There are no gunas, there are no elements. There is only Advaya Brahman. So this is his very lofty perspective. What he is doing in this famous verse is just making it very clear. Duality has no ultimate existence. Duality is a mere appearance. And as a mere appearance, it's not as real as you. That's our take-home message. Everything you experience is a mere appearance. It is not as real as you. It's all like rope snakes. Everything you experience is like the rope snake. So the rope snake has no utpatti, origin, or nirodha, dissolution, in the same way. The world in which we live has no utpatti or nirodha, no origin or dissolution, because it's not real. Duality is not real. That's the point he's making here. Since the universe is not real, what is out there to threaten you and make you suffer? If there's no true existence out there which can threaten you, then where is the problem? So he says, Nabaddha. There is no one who is bound. And here, bound means bound to a life of suffering, bound to being reincarnated again and again and again and again, and undergoing suffering in each and every life. There's no one bound to a life of suffering because there's no world to be bound to. So there is no one who is baddha, no one who is bound, and nacha sadakaha. And there is no spiritual aspirant, no one seeking to come out of bondage, because the person sitting in your chair, having two arms, two legs, etc., how real is that individual person? The one with two legs, two arms, two eyes, two ears. Not two of everything, we got five of these and etc., but we got lots of pairs. So the one sitting in your seat also is not an ultimate reality. It's experienced, and this is our favorite topic, it's experienced, but it's not real. The snake is experienced, it's not real. Sunset is experienced. It's not real. Solidity is experienced. It's not real. We've used all these examples before. That means that the one who seeks bondage, the jiva, the limited individual, is not an absolute reality. Your consciousness is an absolute reality. But this body-mind-sense complex, as we like to say, is not an absolute reality. Therefore, na mumukshuhu. There is no one who is seeking liberation, mumukshu, seeker of liberation, and na muktaha, and no one who is liberated. Interesting. Actually, in this class, we haven't discussed it. Atma, in fact, one of Shankara's favorite adjectives for Atma is Nitya Mukta and Nitya Buddha. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swabhava. That's his favorite thing. Nitya Shuddha, eternally pure. Nitya Buddha, eternally enlightened. Nitya Mukta, eternally free. Atma never got into a state of bondage. Of course, then you ask the question, well, then who is bound? In fact, Shankara takes up that question very nicely. If you say, well, Atma does not suffer bondage at all. Atma never got bound. Atma is Nitya Mukta. Then I'll come to Shankara's answer in just a moment. Before we get there, we can ask the question, then what is the use of Vedanta? And you may have heard me say this before. Vedanta, from the standpoint of Satchidananda Atma, Vedanta is useless. Absolutely useless. Who is Vedanta for? Vedanta is for the one who is bound. So whoever says, I suffer, here's a solution for you. And that's exactly Shankara's answer. When he posed a Purvapaksha, and the Purvapaksha is, who is bound? And his answer is, whoever is asking the question, who suffers bondage, is the one who has a mouth and a mind. Notice, Satchidananda Atma doesn't say anything, doesn't even think anything. Remember, your thoughts are products of your mind and are revealed by consciousness. So consciousness doesn't even think. Consciousness doesn't have will. It's your mind that makes decisions and is driven by desire. So desire drives will to keep doing more and more karmas, which perpetuates the soul cycle of bondage. Gaudapada won't have any of this. He says all of this is a fiction. It's all duality. It's all like the rope snake. And by the way, when we say rope snake and duality, you might be thinking, but there's only one snake. Well, remember, we saw this before. There could be a snake. There could also be a streak of water. There could also be a crack in the ground. There could also be a bent stick. There could also be a mala laying there. So the rope snake doesn't establish non-duality. The rope snake establishes duality. What you experience is a world of duality. That world of duality is mere appearance. The underlying reality is one and non-dual. That underlying reality is you, in the essential sense, in the fundamental sense. You as the conscious being who knows what's happening in your mind right now. That you, that conscious being, Satchidananda Atma, that one is is non-dual, unchanging, uncreated, and everything else is not. So, enough said. Then, we got more to talk about here. Like I said, this is the most important, the most quoted verse in the entire text, and arguably the most important verse. Shankara's commentary is pretty extensive. I'm not going to take you through the commentary, but here's an example. So just I'll just paraphrase for you, or tell you one of the arguments he takes up. And Shankara makes a Purva Pakshi raise this doubt. And he said, here we have the highest expression of these Vedantic teachings, and all it does is negate. Negation, 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 negation. Previously, the Purva Pakshi said, hey, this is starting to sound pretty much like this Shunyavada that the Buddhists teach. And as we've said, Gaudapada is not a Buddhist, and he doesn't accept at all the Shunyavada of the Buddhists. But Shankara's response to this question is very interesting. It is true that Vedanta is a system of negation. Neti, neti, you've heard that. There are positive statements, Satchidananda, Atma, Tattvamasi, these are positive statements. But even those positive statements on analysis are filled with meaning through a process of negation. So there's no one can argue that Vedanta is not primarily a system of negation. I used a double negative, I'm sorry. Vedanta is a system of negation. Then you might say, well, where does that leave us? We just, the world is unreal. Everything you experience is unreal. Your home is unreal. Your children are unreal. Your parents, your car, your job, your boss. You can go on and on and on and on, just dismissing all of this as unreal. But mere dismissal is pretty unsatisfactory. No one, everyone would get that. And that is, if it's mere negation, that's not very sad. How can mere negation lead us to a state of complete freedom from suffering? You can answer that question, I think. Can mere negation lead us to freedom from suffering? So Shankara's response to that question is this. Atma is swatta siddha. Swatta siddha means self-established, self-revealing, self-proved. You don't need anyone to tell you that you're conscious. You don't need to prove that you are a conscious being. You don't need to infer it in any way. That you are a conscious being is a self-evident fact. That's what swatta siddha means, a self-evident fact. Vedanta doesn't need to establish your existence as a conscious being. What Vedanta does is to strip away all your wrong conclusions about that conscious being. And just to be very particular right now, everyone concludes that their consciousness is affected by things that happen outside in the world and things that happen inside your mind. When something terrible happens outside, it affects your consciousness. When something happens inside your mind, like sadness, anger, frustration, it seems to affect consciousness. That's a wrong conclusion. And we've been through this in some detail. I won't go through the whole thing right now, but we've established several times that consciousness is unchanging. An unchanging consciousness can't be affected by anything. You, as a conscious being, your consciousness is the unchanging illuminer of all the changing activities of your mind. Being unchanging, it's utterly unaffected by anything and everything, but we have these wrong conclusions. Conclusions that whatever happens outside affects consciousness, whatever happens in my mind affects consciousness, and these wrong conclusions cause suffering. The way Vedanta works is by removing every last wrong conclusion. When all wrong conclusions are dismissed, all you're left with, all in quotation marks, all you're left with is conscious being. That's all that's left. When you have done this negation completely and thoroughly, the only things about you that are non-negatable is that you are a conscious being. Everything else is negatable. But watch this. Conscious being, where are the problems? Conscious being, without limitations, without problems, without headaches, without having to pay taxes, without having to pay a mortgage. So conscious being doesn't have any of those responsibilities or problems. Conscious being is perfectly full, free, complete. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swabhava, Shankara's terms. That conscious being is Satchidananda Atma. You notice I said conscious being. I didn't. Conscious being, being, sat, conscious, chit. And notice I didn't even bring in ananda, because if you don't have any problems, that's ananda. By the way, most commentators gloss ananda as anantyam, limitlessness. The word ananda can be misleading because we tend to think about ananda as a blissful experience, but you've understood long ago, we're not talking about an experience, we're talking about the experiencer. So ananda is a little bit of a misleading term. And if you ask, well then, if it's misleading, why is it used? My personal theory about that is it's bait and switch. That is, to make these teachings really appealing. Get some ananda. Here you go. And then later you find out that, oh, it's not an experience of ananda. It is limitlessness, the total absence of any limitation or source of suffering. So anyway, that's our Vedantic bait and switch. Okay, so when all problems are removed, suffering, when all, the technical term here is all of your wrong conclusions are due to adhyasa, superimposition. We've used these words before. Just as you superimpose the snake on the rope, you superimpose reality on everything you experience. I'm going to say that again because it's so fundamental. You superimpose the snake on the rope, you get that part. But here, I'm not superimposing a wall. I'm superimposing reality on this wall. That's a superimposition. I take this wall as more real than it truly is. I take this body as more real than it truly is. I take my thoughts and my emotions as more real than they truly are. That's the adhyasa, and that adhyasa is what causes suffering, as we've just established. And then one further step is that adhyasa is the result of ajnana, ignorance. This is our two-step path to suffering. The step one is ignorance. Step one is you don't see the rope. The rope is covered by darkness, just as your true nature is covered by ignorance, avidya or ajnana. So if you saw the rope, you would never superimpose a snake. If you knew your true nature, you would never superimpose the reality of your body. You would never superimpose reality on your body, mind, sense, on the walls, etc. You would know that the reality is one unchanging consciousness that is your true self. But failing to recognize the rope, step two, superimpose the snake. Failing to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, step two, superimpose everything else, and that is what causes suffering. So, to finish this up, what Vedanta does is address the root problem. The root problem is ignorance with regard to your true nature, what Pujya Swami Dayananda called self non-recognition. When you see the rope, you don't have to make the snake go away. When you discover the reality of who you are, you don't need to deal with all the details of the world that cause suffering. All suffering immediately comes to an end. Okay, that is the Vedantic solution to the problem, a solution that is purely negation. Purely negation. When all that is false is negated, all that's left is you minus all your problems. That's it. Okay. There's more to discuss here, so let me share with you. So Shankara's commentary here is really quite nice. I want to share with you just his conclusion to this long commentary, and he concludes just very powerfully. He concludes, "Nahi niyate manasi sushupte va dvaitam grihyate." So he wants to make it absolutely clear that everything you experience is not real. And he makes this observation. He says, niyate, when you are in deep meditation, samadhi, when your mind is in that state of samadhi, sushupteva, or in deep sleep, in samadhi and deep sleep, dvaitam na grihyate, duality is not perceived. Duality is not experienced in samadhi and deep sleep. We've said how many times what is real is that which doesn't come and go. But the entire universe of duality, your experience of duality, comes and goes. How real can that be? So Shankara concludes, ataha, therefore, mano vikalpana matram dvaitam iti siddham. Therefore, iti siddham, it is clearly established that dvaitam, duality, is mano vikalpana matram. Mano, the word manas becomes mano in due to grammar. Vikalpita, projected, imagined. Mano vikalpana matra, merely. Duality is a mere projection of your mind. How real can that be? Duality is a mere projection of your mind. And just to go back to a prior topic, because we know Gaudapada's approach tends to avoid dealing with matters of the external world. So let's bring that in real quickly. Remember the five elephant story I told you? Mm-hmm. Look at this. And I'm not going to go through all those elephants again. Four elephants were in your mind. The fifth is outside in the zoo or in the jungle. So here's the point. Which elephant can affect you? So the elephants in your mind affect you. Sure, they affect you. If you like the elephant, if you don't like the elephant, if it's a cute elephant or an ugly elephant, I don't know what is a cute and ugly elephant. I don't know. It's maybe not the greatest metaphor in the world, but you have a relationship only with the four elephants in your mind. You have no direct relationship with that elephant outside in the zoo or jungle. The only reason you know about that elephant out there is you can see it and hear it. Suppose you were blind and deaf. That elephant wouldn't exist for you. The point here is Vedanta is a solution to the problem of suffering. That elephant outside can't make you suffer. Even if he takes his trunk, grabs you, and flings you across the sky, crashing into the ground, you suffer not because of the outside elephant, but all of the experiences inside your mind. Just to make that really vivid, so this is absolutely unlikely, but it'll maybe make the point. Suppose you are in such deep meditation, samadhi, so in which case you experience no duality whatsoever. So in that state of samadhi, and you are such a great meditator, nothing can shake you out of samadhi, nothing at all. And while you're absorbed in samadhi, this elephant grabs you, flings you into the ground, and you remain in a state of samadhi. How did the elephant affect you? This is Gaudapada's approach. Whatever is out there, he doesn't even want to talk about it, because whatever is out there, it doesn't really affect you. What truly affects you is what happens in your mind. And Shankara then concludes, what happens in your mind is vikalpana. It is a mere projection. Therefore, it is unreal. The duality you experience is in your mind. It is unreal. Tasmat, therefore, suptam dvaitasya asatyatasya. What is this? Tasmat, suptam dvaitasya asatvat nirodhat nirodhadi abhavaha. Dvaitasya asatvat nirodhadi abhavaha. Tasmat, therefore, suktam, it is well said by Gaudapada, it is well said that nirodhadi abhavaha, there is no, he's referring to this verse, there is no such thing as nirodha, utpatti, sadaka, Baddha, etc., all the things that were said in this verse, none of that exists. He says, Tasmat Suktam. Suktam, Su Uktam. Well said, properly said. This is paramartata iti. This is the highest vision of Vedanta. Shankara concludes his rather extensive commentary on this verse. Now, before we go on, I mentioned before that this verse, I don't think people will misquote this verse because the meaning is quite simple. Everything that you experience is not real. So there is no dvaita whatsoever. Iti esha paramartata, this is the highest truth, the highest vision of Vedanta. Pretty hard to mistranslate that. But this verse gets misapplied in some very harmful ways. For example, someone has just lost a loved one. They're suffering grief. And a good friend is an ardent Vedantin. And that ardent Vedantin tells, suppose it's you. You lose a loved one, and this ardent Vedantin tells you, you know, no one is born, no one dies. It's all unreal. This happens too much. This happens. Having lived in ashrams the better part of my life, I've heard it happen. I've seen it happen. It happens in our Vedantic circles where someone will misapply this teaching. This teaching is paramartata, the highest vision of reality. This teaching is not a solution to worldly issues. If you're hungry, telling you that hunger is unreal doesn't make the hunger go away. Remember, I think in this class we've had this discussion. Yeah, we have. The discussion of the three levels of reality. Paramartika satta, vyavaharika satta, and pratibhasika satta. And in that discussion, we established that the usefulness of anything is limited to that particular state. That's abstract, I'll explain it. The usefulness of anything is limited to a particular state. If you're dreaming, real water won't help you. Dream water can help you. If you're awake, dream water, and you're thirsty, dream water can't help you. Waking water can help you. You get the point. So look at this. If you're hungry, well, we'll stay with thirsty. So if you're thirsty, you need a solution appropriate to that level. For dream thirst, you need dream water. For waking thirst, you need waking water. For a dream problem, you need a dream solution. For a waking problem, you need a waking solution. This third level, paramartata, this absolute level, is not a solution to dream thirst or to waking thirst. This, and to misapply this teaching. As I said, you've lost a loved one, and someone says, na nirodha na cha utpattihi. No one is born, no one dies. Iti esha paramartata, this is the highest truth. This is a horrible misapplication of this teaching. The kind of slang expression for this is up-leveling. To up-level means you fail to acknowledge the empirical reality of a problem. You ignore the empirical reality of a problem. And you use this verse as an excuse to ignore the empirical reality of a problem. Huh? This verse is not meant to be an excuse. So be on guard against any situation in which Vedantic teachings are abused. And this is an example of abuse. To tell a grieving person, no one is born, no one dies, is abuse of Vedantic teachings. That's not how these teachings work. It's true, though, if the person who's grieving, if they get this knowledge, their grief will come to an end. But when you tell them no one is born, no one dies, that's not imparting knowledge. That's imparting more suffering. You're adding to their suffering. So anyway, I don't need to tell you not to do it, but I do want to point out that these teachings are misused. Not mistranslated, but misused in that way. Okay, this verse summarizes the chapter. Chapter 2, Vaitatya Prakarana. It's considered by many the most important verse in the entire Karika, and it is absolutely the most quoted verse from the Karika. Let's continue. Bhavarasadbhirevayam advayena cha kalpitaha advayena cha kalpitaha bhava apyadvayenaiva bhava apyadvayan tasmad advayata shiva tasmad advayata shiva. Ayam, just to get the meaning of the first line, find the word ayam hidden in that first line, bhavaihi asadbihi eva ayam. Ayam is our pronoun this in the masculine gender. It refers to atma. Ayam, atma. Remember in the Upanishad in the first chapter, it's all about that atma, which is the chaturtha, the fourth, the unchanging consciousness. The three states of experience keep coming and going. That chaturtha, that fourth component, is the unchanging consciousness. I am this one is what we call atma. Here he says, I am this one, this conscious self, this atma, is kalpitaha. Kalpitaha, my translation is actually not very good here. Cross, if you have printed it out, please cross off the word considered and write down the word imagined. Not considered, imagined. This atma is kalpita. It is imagined. It is imagined to be abhavaihi asadbihi. It is imagined to be in all various unreal forms. Bhava, and a thing. Bhava just means a thing here. Asad bhava, unreal things. Remember, this consciousness is identical to Brahman, the fabric of existence. This consciousness is not your consciousness, even though I use that expression from time to time. This consciousness is the ultimate reality. So this consciousness becomes experienced in many forms. Of course, four of the five forms that are experienced are inside your mind. Four elephants are inside. The fifth one is outside. It's very easy to establish that the four elephants inside your mind are made of consciousness. But we can even establish that the fifth one outside in the jungle is also made of consciousness. It just takes more work to establish that. We're not going to go through all that right now. Gaudapada doesn't care. He says it can't affect you anyway. So why worry about it? So focusing here on bhavaihi asadbihi, everything you experience in the world, everything that appears in your experiences, ayam atma kalpitaha, is a projection. You attribute to it reality. Right now, you're looking at me, and you think I'm really sitting here. What a joke! And just to remind you, the one that you experience most directly is the Swami Tadatmananda in your mind. The one out here, who knows? You don't even know if I'm a human being. Suppose I'm some really elaborately created robot and a just really well done robot. You don't know. There's no way of knowing. Point is, the reality you experience is the Swami Tadatmananda in your mind, and you attribute to that Tadatmananda in your mind more reality than it deserves. After all, just to make the obvious point, if you close your eyes, what happens to that Tadatmananda? Gone. All you have to do is close your eyes, or if you're wearing glasses, you take the glasses off and that one gets fuzzy. How real is that one? That's what you experience in your mind. That is kalpitaha. So this consciousness is kalpitaha. It is imagined in the form of these asadbihi bhavaihi, all the various experiences that arise in your mind, which are not ultimately real. But this same consciousness can also be kalpita now in a sense of considered. So we'll use it in both senses. So in one sense, atma is imagined to be the experience of duality. And on the other hand, I am atma. This consciousness is kalpitaha in the sense of considered. It is considered to be advayena cha. It is considered as being non-dual. So on one hand, this consciousness can be considered to be manifold, all the many things that you experience. On the other hand, the same consciousness can be considered to be non-dual. Obviously, one who is ignorant will imagine this consciousness to be manifest as many real things that you experience. An enlightened person will not make that mistake, knowing that this one consciousness is non-dual. But now, when you have two perspectives, so you have the perspective, was context. Give me just a moment, see if I remember. An interesting argument with someone, and I can't quite remember the essence of it, but they were arguing that some aspects of ignorance are good. And the argument was, It's not, I have a very strange argument, but, and this reminds me of that argument. Here we have two perspectives. Let me set that aside. Here we have two perspectives. One person says everything you experience is what you see is what you get, a world of duality. And another person will say, no, it's all appearances of one non-dual consciousness, one non-dual Brahman. So you have two perspectives, and now you need to weigh them. Weigh them according to what? And this is, I wish I remember that discussion, because it had to do particularly with this very point. whether one is true and or not, let me preface this a little bit. Remember, as you've heard me say too many times, we're not philosophers. We're not doing this as an abstract theoretical search for a concept which is true. We're not comparing. We do compare, and I want to choose my words properly here. We are not philosophers passing judgment on what is real and what is unreal. Although I admit, much of this sounds like philosophical judgments about what is real and what is not real. And it's undeniable that that is a major part of what we've been studying. What I do mean to say, though, is that's not our goal. Our goal is not to make a philosophical distinction between what is real and what is unreal, or what is real and what is less real. That would be sheer philosophy. You've heard me say too many times that Vedanta is a solution to the problem of suffering. So, when we compare these two positions, it's not, we care less about one position being true and the other position being false. We're more concerned with one position leads to the cessation of suffering, the other position leads to the continuation of suffering. That really is our perspective. So the philosopher is concerned about weighing the truth value, if that's a word, the weighing the truth of two different propositions. We are less concerned about weighing the truth of these two propositions. We're more concerned with finding out which proposition leads to freedom from suffering. What are the two propositions? One proposition is what you see is what you get. The other proposition is what you see is mere appearance. The reality is non-dual consciousness. And in the second half, Gaudapada makes a very interesting comparison between these two propositions. One comparison, he says, is that bhavaha, all of the various things you experience, api, advayena eva, all the various things you experience exist because of non-dual consciousness. I'm being literally correct, but it's not going to make any sense. Go back to those two propositions. One proposition is what you see is what you get. The other proposition is everything is an appearance of non-dual consciousness. What he says in his third quarter is that the what you see is what you get proposition depends on the first one. If there were no consciousness, is there what you see is what you get? You don't see anything. Without consciousness, there's no experience. Without consciousness, there's no experience of duality. And to use his language, without non-dual consciousness, there is no experience of duality. I'll say that that's what he's saying here. Without non-dual consciousness, there is no experience of duality. So he is changing this weighing thing. In the first line, he says, let's weigh these two propositions. Which one is true? Which one is untrue? And these two fellows can go on arguing about that, the enlightened one and the unenlightened one. they can go on arguing about this a long time. How to solve that argument? He offers two answers to that. I'm being a little fussy here, but it's a tricky verse. The proposition that what you see is what you get, and a proposition that everything is an appearance of non-dual consciousness. How to resolve which of these two propositions is the one we should accept? So his first argument is that one proposition is derived from the other. The proposition that what you see is what you get, that proposition depends on consciousness. So the proposition that there is non-dual consciousness, that proposition has to logically, and pardon my language, I don't know how else to do it, that proposition logically precedes the proposition what you see is what you get. It has logical precedence, and that's his argument. That's one of two arguments. So when you're weighing these two propositions, his first, he gives two answers. His first answer is, so the two propositions, what you see is what you get versus non-dual consciousness. So his first, when weighing these two arguments, his first response is that non-dual consciousness has to come first. Otherwise, what you see is what you get. You don't see anything, therefore you don't get anything. So non-dual consciousness has to logically precede, not time-wise precede, logically precede. It's more fundamental, it's more causal than the second proposition, what you see is what you get. Yes, that is very philosophical, very technical, but that leads to his second reason in weighing these two. So the first one he gives is extremely logical, very, very dry. But his second one is the opposite. And he says, tasmat, therefore. So since we have used logic to completely dismiss the reality of duality, that's what he's done in this third quarter of the verse. He said that all duality is derived from non-dual consciousness. It is a derivative reality, like the pot is derived from clay. So clay is more real than the pot. The experience of duality, what you see is what you get, is derived from non-dual consciousness. Therefore, what you see is what you get is not as real as non-dual consciousness. So this is, he's really hammering, using a lot of logic. But this logic, as I was saying before, there has to be the benefit in solving the problem of suffering. If you are logically correct and miserable, what good is it? And just a quick aside here. You've been in arguments where you were right and the other person was clearly wrong. And chances are, at least once, you've asserted your rightness and dismissed the other person's wrongness. Have you ever walked away from that argument and regretted it? Because there's more than just being right. What about that person's feelings? So you blasted that person as being wrong. You used all your logic and reasoning faculties to prove that that person was wrong, and you emerged from that argument triumphant. You are right. And then you realize how you hurt the other person's feelings. And this is a metaphor for the point we're going to come to in just a moment. And the point is, being logically correct doesn't make... What's the point? Okay, you're logically... you're logically correct. So what? Being right is that and that only. You're logically correct. So what? And that's... So he makes a point here. He says, tasmat, therefore, advayata, non-duality. Non-duality is Shiva. By the way, this has got nothing to do with Shiva. Mahashivaratri is coming. No connection whatsoever. So Shiva is also an adjective. An adjective which has meanings like pure, like holy, like auspicious. And it's used in that sense here. Advayata is Shiva in the sense of auspicious. And let me, what is it, page 118. Shankara explains this nicely. He says, he says, kalpana eva tu ashiva. He says, whatever you project is not auspicious in the sense that projections cause suffering. Just to make that very clear, projections cause suffering. In the absence of any projections whatsoever, no suffering, as in deep sleep. In deep sleep, there are no kalpanas, no projections whatsoever. And notably, deep sleep is a condition totally free from suffering. Yes, it's true that many kalpanas are pleasant. We don't deny that, but many are unpleasant. The fact remains, in the total absence of kalpana, as in deep sleep, there is zero suffering. So therefore, kalpana is, according to Shankara, ashiva. So shiva means auspicious, ashiva, inauspicious, and he explains, Raju sarpadi vat trasadi karinyaha hi taha. Taha, those kalpanas, those mental creations, I'm looking for a precise expression for kalpana, those mental creations, the mental creations we experience not just during dream, but right now. Remember, the Swami Tadatmananda you see is your creation, right? The one sitting on this chair arguably was created in part due to my parents, but the one inside your head is your creation. That is kalpana. And he says here that taha, those kalpanas, those mental creations, are trasadi karanyaha. They cause fear and other unpleasant emotions. Raju sarpadi vat, as in the case of seeing the snake on the rope. So the projection of the snake is not neutral. The projection of the snake causes fear. The projection of the snake causes suffering. Our projection, and again, the fundamental projection, we're talking about this at a very fundamental level here, the fundamental projection we're dealing with is to project too much reality on everything we experience. We experience it all right, but it's not as real as it seems. This wall is not as real as it seems. Your body is not as real as it seems. Your thoughts are not as real as they seem. Your emotions are not as real as they seem. Your problems are not as real as they seem. We project reality upon all of these that they don't deserve, and by doing so, we create suffering for ourselves. To use Pujya Swami Dayananda's language, we, through our ignorance, we transform situations into problems. A situation is a fact. High blood pressure is a fact. But, oh, I have an illness. It's a problem. High blood pressure is a fact. Cancer is a fact. Death is a fact. Grieving is a fact. But we convert these facts into problems, and we suffer. And these teachings of Vedanta are to help us drop that ignorance-based superimposition, pardon the complicated language. These teachings help us drop our ignorance-based superimposition of reality on what is not absolutely real. And in doing so, we become free from suffering. Okay. We have just two verses left in this chapter, so next class we'll finish this chapter and I think begin the third chapter of the Karika. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet asato ma satgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om. See you next time.